The Magic Trick Conundrum. A quote from the film The Prestige, the character John Cutter. Every magic trick consists of three parts or acts. The first part is called the pledge. The magician shows you something ordinary. The second act is called the turn. The magician takes the ordinary something and makes it into something extraordinary. Now you're looking for the secret. But you won't find it because, of course, you're not really looking. You don't really want to work it out. You want to be fooled. That's why every magic trick has a third act. The hardest part. The part we call the prestige. Do you like magic? Growing up, I loved those little magic sets you could buy. I remember showing my grandparents tricks and them reacting like I was David Copperfield making the Statue of Liberty disappear. I loved seeing their reaction and carried an interest in all things magic from then on. In my teenage years, American magician David Blaine hit the big time with his street magic show, which led to me and a friend deciding to find out how to do the grown-up tricks in his set that were blowing the minds of people around the world, as well as learning at a relatively early age a stereotypical difference between British and American people. When Blaine bit a coin in half and spat it back together, the Americans he performed it to on camera put their hands to the side of their heads and screamed as though they'd just seen a real-life ghost. Some of them fainted, others pissed their pants. British people I showed the same trick to just sort of went, yeah, it's good that, yeah. I discovered the way around this, aside from moving to the United States, was only to perform to British people after 2 a.m. when they'd been drinking alcohol for at least 6 hours. It turns out drunk British people react to street magic just like sober Americans. It resulted in me showing tricks to people after nights out in Liverpool city centre and receiving reactions close to the ones my grandparents were so generous with when I was a kid. The point of telling you all this though is how one of my best mates would react to seeing me baffling pissed up passers-by. He would stare at my hands and ask me to repeat routines to try to figure out how each trick was done. The problem with doing that, without revealing too many secrets that might ruin magic forever for you, is that most magic tricks aren't done when you think they are. If you've watched the Christian Bale and Hugh Jackman movie The Prestige, you'll know that magic comes in three parts, as John Cutter explained. The issue for most people trying to figure out how a trick is done is that the part they stare at most is the prestige, the last of the three parts. The issue is the prestige is usually just the performance. It's what separates the great magicians from the rest. Most professionals can do the tricks, but the very special ones present them in a way that blow your mind. The mind-blowing part takes our attention when the magic was often done long before we were really watching. On some occasions, the real trick was done days, weeks, or years earlier, which is where the similarities with our lives come in. We've been trained through our days on earth to look at symptoms. We stare at the problems as they present themselves and think we're working on figuring out how to solve them. But the problem is, just like a magic trick, we're usually just looking at the prestige. We're usually looking at the presentation of something that really started decades ago, which is why we can't figure out the puzzle or resolve the challenge no matter what we do. We're staring at the magician's hands when we should really be looking at what he was doing before he came into the theatre. The question we have to ask ourselves is, do we really want to know the root of the problem, or do we want to continue to be fooled? An untidy table of love. To make more sense of all this, here's an example from my life of what I've just described. In my longest romantic relationship, which culminated in a 6-year marriage, a long-standing issue between my partner and I was how untidy she was in comparison to me. It would cause arguments on a regular basis, largely because I couldn't understand why she couldn't just stick to the things she would promise me. A key point of consternation for me was the dining table. My partner would slowly pile more and more things on the table, one of the first things I would see when walking into our home. The untidiness would irritate me, so I would ask, in as many different ways as I could think over the years, if she could just keep it tidy. My partner would always promise me she would. More often than not, I would come home later the same day or later that week to a table covered in mess, which would lead to another argument. We would have that argument on loop for over a decade. Are you in a relationship now, or have you been one in the past in which you've had the same argument over and over again, possibly for years, and have never been able to resolve it? Or do you have the same issue with an employee, a boss, a friend, a child, or other family member? Does it drive you insane that you can't resolve the issue no matter how many times you discuss it? It's probably because you're looking in the wrong place. After the breakthroughs during my therapy and coaching I described in my origin story in chapter 1, I had a huge realization. The problem wasn't the untidy table or untidy house. I was looking at the prestige instead of figuring out when the magic trick was really done. As with most problems in our lives, the real issue was more than 30 years before when I was a little boy and began to believe that I wasn't good enough. Sounds crazy, right? This is how these things really play out in our subconscious while we're busy being distracted by our ego and conscious mind. I think I'm asking my partner to keep a table tidy, but what I'm really asking deep inside is whether she loves me. When she promises me she will keep it tidy, I hear that she does love me and I'm happy. But when I walk in to find she didn't keep her promise, while at a conscious level my ego tells me I'm annoyed by an untidy table, the subconscious message I receive is my partner doesn't love me, and even deeper, it's because I'm not good enough and don't deserve love. I appreciate this might sound insane at first glance, but if you're prepared to sit with each of the problems you face in life and keep working through them to find the real root cause, I'd place a large bet that you'll find a similar thing, but only if you're prepared to be honest with yourself and keep digging beyond the stories you've believed for years and do so with a completely open mind. The vast majority of all our problems go back to our childhoods, to traumas, programming experiences, and ultimately the belief that we're not good enough. The upside of that, repair your own self-worth, understand you are good enough as you are, with all of your darkness and light, and your problems slowly drift away. In my own life, I've largely cured depression, suicidal thoughts, a reliance on alcohol, an addiction to stress and attention, a brain that wouldn't shut up, deep insecurities, the need to be praised for everything I do, and countless other things. I even discovered that another unintended bonus of the work is I can now follow my favourite football team in a calmer way, experiencing all of the incredible highs that come with it and just walking away as if nothing has happened when they lose. It's still a work in progress and always will be. But for the most part, my self-worth is no longer attached to the outside world. All the people and events that previously affected me in damaging ways don't anymore. It really is like real life magic.